Sox fans, welcome in to the Sox on Tap podcast. It's your host, Tony Marchese, alongside NWI Steve, the hashtag Bannister Bot. We're back with our first series recap of the 2024 season. As Steve likes to say, what are we, Steve?
We're hashtag back, baby.
We're hashtag back. It's great to be back. I'm back in Chicago. I haven't had a chance to catch much White Sox baseball yet, but still following along. Steve, I know you were there opening day. We'll get to some of that stuff before we do. Be sure you're following the show at Sox on Tap on the X Machine. You can follow Steve at NWI underscore Steve, myself at Tony on Tap. We're going to talk about a lot of White Sox losses, as we're sort of accustomed to from last season. But here we are, Steve. How you doing, my friend?
Heyo, Anthony. I'm doing well. Look, it's a holiday weekend. Baseball's back in full force. Watched a lot of ball over the last couple, 2-3 days here. Obviously, Friday with the off day, had a chance to watch a lot of stuff from around the league here. And then taking in, you know, obviously the Sox performances the last 2 nights here. look, a lot of what we saw this weekend are things that we kind of anticipated coming into the season. So there wasn't really anything here that shocked me or anything that stood out. This is very much in line with what I thought it was going to be and what I think it's going to be for a vast majority of this season.
Well, you and Besnick, you can follow him at Sox Insane on Twitter. You guys just did a little season preview show, and in true NWI Steve form, I know you were a little bit negative on there. I don't know if we want to call it negative or realistic at this point in time. But you guys, thanks for holding the fort down while I was out. You gave some pretty ominous predictions, Steve, about what this season was going to be. I think that's sort of been the sentiment across a lot of different White Sox fans heading into this. I know we've had a lot of conversations this offseason with many different individuals who were part of our rebuild series. Hope everybody's enjoying that. We'll touch on that a little bit later in the show as well. But Sox come out of the gate 0-3 against the Detroit Tigers here. Not different as we were told that this was going to be. I know that the brand of baseball looks a little bit different, but the results here, initial takeaway from this series, Steve.
You know, despite going 0-3, I think it was a little bit more palatable brand of baseball that we saw from them. 3-1 run losses, while annoying, I think it's just kind of a microcosm of, like I said, what we're going to see this season. At the end of the day, what it comes down to is this for me. Bad teams don't find ways to win close games and games that they can and should win. This is something that we're going to see a lot of here over the course of the 2024 season, because this team just simply doesn't have the horses to be able to win these races on a nightly basis here. As Ozzy famously said during the 2005 season, you can't run the Kentucky Derby if you don't have the horses. And this is kind of where we're at right now. Again, it wasn't a sloppy brand of ball like we saw for much of the last 2 seasons here, but there are still some annoying things in here offensively, I think in particular, that are persisting and things that I was very concerned about when I said that this team was only going to win 58 games coming into the season here. And they kind of played themselves out that way over this first weekend.
I think from a defensive perspective, Steve, there was a lot less little league bullshit than what we saw last year. Cleaner brand of baseball on the defensive side is definitely one of my key takeaways as well. The pitching, surprisingly, I would say more than palatable for the most part. I know you've got some notes that you want to touch on as well with that, as we get through some of these individualized game recaps. But in terms of initial takeaways, the pitching and defense was definitely there. Offensively, I felt like I was watching the exact same team, if not a worse version of last year's team on the offensive side. And that is going to cause a lot of frustration for you and I through the season. I know this is our first show all year. We're probably going to have some of these same themes. I'm just as a betting man, as a guessing man, I think we're going to have some of these same themes throughout the year. So hopefully by May, June, we don't sound like a broken record, but I would probably put money on it that we do. Steve, let's get into opening day. You got to go out to the ballpark. You were there with our guy Buzz. I think Beznik was out there as well. I was down in Arizona enjoying the warm weather. You got the opportunity to continue your opening day streak. I don't know what you're at, but tell me about the ballpark atmosphere and how it was getting back into the lots.
Well, this was my 16th consecutive home opener for this team. This was by far the most subdued opening day environment that I've experienced.
That's not what I wanted to hear, but I believe it.
It just kind of is what it is at this point. There really was no
buzz. Is that due to the lack of the Jello shots in Lappy?
That didn't help. Well, it also didn't help the fact that I was shooed away from lot B as I got to the very front of the fucking line. You know how they like to have two lanes?
Yes.
Going into lot B. I literally got to the very front on the rightmost lane. That left lane had a line full of cars behind me. And I had an attendant in the parking lot telling me, no, you can't go here. You have to go to C.
Is that just because of your lane choice? Now, I know this changes as you're
getting into
the ballpark on various days.
That's how I took it. He said the lot's 85% full. I said, you've got a line full of people right behind me here. And you mean to tell me you're letting those people in? But I'm literally right here, and you can't let me in when I have people in this lot? And he said, no, you can't go in there. And I said, I literally have people in here. You have a line full of people back here. He literally put himself in front of my car and said, you have to go to C.
So this has happened to me once before. I can't remember if it was an opening day game, a Sox Cubs game, or a like Yankees in town game, but I had got into that right lane. And then for the rest of the year, you almost have some sort of mini panic attack when they've got those two lines up, because the leftmost lane is always full of people. And sometimes you're able to just zoom past that line and there's two attendants there that are letting you in. So I'm appalled that they keep doing that and switching it up. There should be some signage. I would guess that there was no signage that when you picked the lane that you were getting into, that you were going to be shooed away into lot C. But that's unfortunate.
So, Bradley and I, we made the best of the situation. We actually just hung out in lot C ourselves. We had some pops. We had some visitors along the way kind of come through. Ray from Ray's Juke Joint, he stopped by with some dope wearing a leopard print shirt at one point. We had some fun. There was a family man by the name of Matt Crawford, who I famously was able to get out of some very egregious and false charges over the course of the winter. He made an appearance with some of his crew. So, like I said, Bradley and I, we made the best of the situation. I had a really messed up morning in there. And the fact that I didn't even get into the lot until after noon on that day, because I had...
That's late for you.
I had a catering mishap, thanks to the fine folks at Easy Cater. Fuck all of you for canceling an order on me for one of my physicians at 4 p.m. on Wednesday. So you royally fucked my Thursday, my opening day experience, you sons of bitches.
Well, that's unfortunate for you, Stephen. I know you like to get to the lots nice and early. You talk about it being subdued. It sounds like we didn't have as many people as we're used to seeing out there. I know I wasn't in attendance. I'll put the blame on my vacation there, but it was, I still missed the atmosphere of opening day at the ballpark. It looked as if there was a fair amount of people who showed up for Thursday's home opener, more than I expected. Based on some of the Ticketmaster screenshots I was seeing online, I expected there to be a lot more empty seats. The upper deck seemed sort of subdued compared to most opening days, but how was the crowd?
They said the announced attendance was, I think, a shade over 33,000 on the day here, which, again, was a lot more than I was anticipating. I was seeing a lot of those same screenshots that you were, and I was anticipating it only being about 26,000 out of there, so they were able to squeeze another 78,000 out of what I was originally anticipating. Again, I personally didn't think there was a lot of buzz in the ballpark. And, you know, people just know what this team is going to be. And the fact of the matter is, during the course of that game, the White Sox didn't give much of a reason outside of Garrett Crochet going out there pitching his nuts off. The team didn't give fans any reason for excitement. Not a single base runner got to second base. You know, I mean,
that's what they call a tough scene in the business.
It is. It really is. You know, you're not going to win a whole lot of baseball games doing that. So that's a problem right there. And that's the type of thing that will lead to a lack of energy and a lack of excitement in the ballpark, unfortunately.
Not enough fireworks. I know they light them off as they're announcing the team, but that was pretty much it. I was watching this poolside. And there wasn't a lot of reasons to keep my eyes glued to the TV screen outside of Garrett Crochet either there, because there was not a lot of offense. But let's talk Garrett Crochet. Let's talk some positives here. Crochet was lighting up the radar gun, which we like to see. I expected, I'll talk about expectations first before we get into his actual performance. I expected Garrett Crochet to go 3, maybe 4 innings, sort of serve as an opener, even though I know they said, you know, he's not going to be an opener, but this is this guy's first major league start. Sort of a big game for him. I'm sure there was maybe some butterflies, probably not as much as somebody who would be making their first big league appearance, but first big league start on opening day. And man, did he live up to ace status, in my opinion. What do you go? 6 innings, 8 strikeouts. The slider looked absolutely fantastic. The fastball had a lot of zip to it. Steve, you like your pitchers to get you some outs here. I want you to take this over and tell me what you saw from Garrett Crochet and what you expect this means going forward.
Well, Garrett Crochet went out there and gave Sox fans everything they could have possibly hoped for in this performance on opening day. This is the first time you're going to hear it this year, boys and girls. Get fucking used to it. I need 18 outs minimum for my starters. That's the minimum I'm willing to accept. Garrett Crochet went out there and he did that. And he did it very efficiently. What's another pet peeve of mine? Walking hitters. Garrett Crochet went out there and walked 0. Zilch. None. Not a single one. In my baseball world, that is a stand-up performance from a guy making his first career big league start. And again, you can't be anything other than thrilled than what you got out of Garrett Crochet on opening day. He was going out there, working ahead in counts consistently. And one of the other things I like to talk about all the time, and you can gauge a pitcher's performance in a lot of ways by the reactions of the hitter. The hitter's reactions will tell you a lot about what a pitcher has on a given day. There weren't a lot of comfortable at-bats from the Detroit Tigers hitters on Thursday here against Garrett Crochet. He was going in there, mixing in that high upper 90s to, in some cases, triple-digit fastball, hard-biting slider. He's working in a sweeper in there, and even reports of a cutter being worked in there. So he's diversifying his pitch mix, as he is going to need to do in his efforts to be a starting pitcher. But again, just going out there, varying up his sequencing, keeping the Tigers hitters off balance. And I know that Tigers lineup, that's not a world beater, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. But he went out there and did exactly what you're supposed to do in that situation. Say, here it is, you sons of bitches. Try and hit it if you can. And that's what I want to see out of these starting pitchers right there. So, again, Garrett Crochet, kudos to you. You went out there and you gave this team everything they could have possibly hoped for. And, in my opinion, more on opening day.
It was a very impressive debut for a guy that a lot of people were starting to write off as, you know, just a, you know, reliever, waste draft pick. You know, we've said some things and things have been said about Garrett Crochet. I think he went out there and that was a real prove it moment for him. Very positive developments here for White Sox fans, seeing him go out there and perform like this. A lot of people sort of had some debate over the whole Dylan Cease move because, you know, some people wanted them to continue to build around him. I think still the smart move was to move on from Dylan Cease.
That Scott Boras still exists.
Yeah, exactly. So to see the White Sox just have a pitcher in this rotation that you can look forward to seeing every turn through the rotation. Garrett Crochet sort of gave you that. And I don't know if this is going to last. This could be a one-off. We don't know. But I'm excited to watch Garrett Crochet pitch the next game. And as a White Sox fan going into this season, you're talking about, 58 wins. Having something like that in the rotation to look forward to, I think, is a very positive development for us who do the show and people who consume White Sox baseball to talk about going forward. Let's see if he can replicate it. He does give up the game-winning run, the only run that was scored in this ball game. The bullpen worked fairly clean throughout the rest of the game, but there's really no other story from the White Sox, in my opinion, than Garrett Crochet on Thursday.
You're right, and that's because the offense didn't go out there and do much of anything. They hit three hits total. They had three base runners. Same old song and dance from this White Sox team. Not a single walk. Complete lack of plate discipline. Now, at the same time, Tarik Skubal did go out there and did throw the ball very well. Okay, so you have to give him a level of credit for this as well here. And look, in some ways, you know, that's just kind of a good old-fashioned major league pitcher's duel out there. And, you know, you could almost make the case, and there are some people I've listened to MLB radio here quite a bit over the course of the last couple of days here leading up to the season. A lot of people saying that, you know, they think Tarik Skubal is probably the best starting pitcher in the American League Central right now. And, you know, Shane Bieber is still around. Pablo Lopez, you know, still up in Minnesota with the Twins here. But, you know, Tarik Skubal is a guy that has had success at the major league level here, been bit by the injury bug a little bit, but seems to be back fully healthy now. And this is somebody that has some prospect pedigree here. So, you know, it's not unthinkable to say, hey, he's going to go out there and he's going to shut out a completely bad offense. So it wasn't, you know, anything that, like, you look at it and say, oh, my God, just a horrendous performance. I think there are some concerns that did rear their ugly head again here. We saw that again here today, unfortunately, in the series recap. And obviously, I think we'll get back to that a little bit. But you could certainly make the case, like I said, that this was just a good old-fashioned pitcher's duel. And, you know, it's going to happen from time to time.
Yeah, Sox offense only mustered three hits throughout that ball game, Steve. Robert, Eloy, Vaughn, middle of the order. There wasn't much else going on there. And Steve, you brought up a note before we started this. They didn't walk at all on Thursday. So you've only reached base three times. Can't string together hits. That's not going to get the job done. Sox eventually fall in this one 1-0. I really don't want to talk much more about it. The only other question I have for you, Steve, is how many beers did Buzz have in the ballpark and Lot C combined? Was he enjoying himself? I know he doesn't make it out to many White Sox games. That's his first game since last year's opening day. I hope Buzz enjoyed himself at the ballpark.
Bradley himself also had a rough morning work-wise there. So between the two of us here, we finished off a 12-pack before we went into the park, and neither one of us actually partook in any additional beverages once we got inside the ballpark there. So, you know,
you're like not giving Jerry any money, huh?
I'm trying my best not to give that asshole a single penny more than I really have to.
Well, that's a strategy. Moving on to Saturday, Steve, there was some offense. Finally, I was wondering if this team was going to figure out a way to score a run at all this season. Saturday, there was some offense provided by the Chicago White Sox. And I think we'd be remiss if we didn't get a double R roll for the two home runs that Luis Robert Jr. Hit. And I'll give you the stage here in a second. We also had another home run, his first MLB hit from Shoemake. And that's good to see. That place looked buzzing on Saturday compared to Thursday. And I think, just in my opinion, I think a sweatshirt had something to do with it more than actually people wanting to show up to watch this team. But that's, you know, just my opinion here. I don't know about you. I was surprised to see that ballpark as filled on Saturday as it was.
You know, if there's one thing we know about this fan base, they do love the free giveaway at the expense of Jerry Reinsdorf. You know, that is one kind of surefire way to at least get 25 to 27,000 people in the ballpark consistently. I think they were shade over 28 on Saturday, and they did get to see Mr. Luis
I think that's the double right there. There you go.
Junior, put two of them in the seats right there and set off those fireworks that I know you love to see. And, you know, that first one that he nuked off of Kenta Maeda worked a real good at bat right there. You know, we've seen really strong at bats, I would say, for the majority of the weekend from Luis Robert Jr. And there was actually a story that came out, you know, James Fegan actually talking about this, one of the drills that Robert was working on over the course of the winter, and some of the things that he's doing to try to clean up his approach offensively here and really trying to do more zone hitting and looking at pitches specifically in one particular zone and essentially trying to cut off half the plate and not trying to cover the entirety of the plate, saying, you know what, I'm looking in this particular zone. If it's, you know, middle in or middle away for a particular bat, I'm going to look and I'm not going to deviate from that. You know, and that certainly is one way and one approach that guys can take offensively here. And, you know, we saw him, you know, work a walk over the weekend. He should have had another walk in his first at bat here today, but was called out on a strike three that was pretty egregious out of the zone. The framing attempt by Jake Roberts was mediocre at best, we will say here. So I'm going to be interested to see this kind of progress over the course of the season and really see if this is something that is going to stick for Luis Robert Jr. And hopefully it will allow him to continue to just be a force offensively. You know, one of the things I talk about pretty regularly with him and even like with guys like Tim Anderson, who were not particularly selected when he was here, was put yourself in a position to be dangerous in the strike zone. Get yourself into hitters' counts so that you can be aggressive and do damage on the baseball. And this is one of the ways that he can do that. And hopefully it will allow him to get into more of those 2-0, 3-1 counts where he can go and really just unleash, turn and burn, and try to nuke the ball onto the fucking concourse.
And that he did. I mean, I think the first one went 449. I'm not sure on the distance of the second one, but man, to see him coming out of the gate, knock two of them out of the park in the same day. And then that story about the, you know, zone hitting, I did have a chance to read that as well. It sort of signifies a little bit of development. Now, I'm not sure if this is going to translate. Obviously he put up some pretty damn good numbers last season without working on the zone hitting. And obviously we talked about his weaknesses last year, swinging at pitches low and way out of the zone, which seems to be a White Sox common problem, especially with the guys in the middle of the order. It sort of makes you wonder, like, does Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert talk about approach together? Because both of those guys had the exact same problem for what seems like their entire career at this point. I know Robert gave his first English interview right before opening day with Chuck Garfine. I want another interview with Luis Robert talking more about this in specific, about team approach to hitting versus just him individually. I'd be curious to see what they say about, you know, that development piece, or ask Eloy. We'll talk more about Eloy in a minute, but like, why does this come now, Steve? Like, why did it take that long? Because that kind of pisses me off. I don't know about you. I'm happy that we've identified problems and we're trying to fix them. But why does it take until now in the development stage to get there?
You're not going to like part of this answer. Sure. Because part of this answer has to do with, you know, a couple-year period there where this team was trying to go backwards instead of going forward.
So you're going to blame Tony La Russa for this?
You're telling me that? Oh, I'm not saying that this is
so
all
Tony, but I'm just curious.
No, Tony, stop. Dunk.
You can't just pin it on La Russa.
I'm not. You're not. You're choosing not to listen. You took one part and you chose to run with it.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Explain yourself.
At the end, he point blank said that he wanted to do things differently, that he wanted to take things back to previous eras of baseball and the way that it was played. Now, again, this is not all on him. This has been an organizational problem for years, this team being behind the curve from a development, from an analytical, and from a data standpoint. Everybody knows they have one of the smallest R&D teams in the entire league. And when you have a guy come in here and say that he wants to do things differently, wants to do things like they were done several decades before when he was successful, that is going to have significant ramifications on the organization as a whole. You can like Tony La Russa all you want.
I just don't
deny that fact.
That's fine. I just don't think that, regardless of analytics or what have you, swinging at strikes versus not swinging at strikes or swinging at balls outside of the zone hasn't changed for 100 fucking years in this game. You should be able to identify early on in the development of a baseball player, regardless of analytics, that a guy has a problem just from the eye test at swinging at pitches out of the zone. I don't have some magic fucking dashboard here that tells me that he's swinging at pitches outside of the zone, because you can watch the game and see this guy has a problem with this specific pitch. It's easily identifiable. Like, you can sit somebody down at that point and say, why are you swinging at that? And have a conversation about, this is not good, right? Like, at what point do they need to have an analytics guy sit him down with a bunch of data and say, here's what we're seeing. Here's what you're seeing. This is the same guy that literally sat there last year and told people he doesn't want to look at this shit in terms of analytics. He just wants to know how fast a pitcher throws.
And that's a problem.
Yeah, that was a huge problem. But I just don't think that, like, the analytics people are the ones who are responsible for Luis Robert's, you know, swing selection here.
The articulation of the information is important, and how that gets articulated to.
So are you giving flowers here to Pedro Grifol? Is my next question. Did he change Luis Robert's plate approach?
No. I'm going to credit more with Brian the likes of a Josh Barfield or maybe a Chris Getz. We don't, you know, I'm curious to know who else maybe they have brought in behind the scenes on the offensive side of this piece. Everybody knows I'm the lead banister bot.
What if it was Jim Thome?
No. Never trust a Cleveland Indian.
I'm just giving you shit here.
I will never.
I mean, I'm happy with the development. I just want to know what changed and if it was just individual Luis Robert Jr. like hyper-focus, we want to develop this versus, hey, let's look at Eloy Jimenez. Let's look at Andrew Faughn and even down through, you know, some of the lesser offensive players, if this was a system-wide approach or if this was just hyper-focused on Luis Robert.
I think it has to be a system-wide breakdown, because if you look at organizationally as a whole, if you look at all 30 organizations from top to bottom at the major league level all the way down to the Arizona complex leagues, the White Sox have the lowest walk rate across all their organizations of any organization in the sport. That tells you this is an organizational defect, and this has been a problem for years at a time. So I would love to know more. I would love to know what other steps that they are taking to try to correct and address this issue. I want to know who is having these conversations with Luis Robert Jr. And, you know, how else are they explaining things to him and to the likes of Eloy and other hitters? Remember, there was all the hubbub last year about Jake Berger using the eye pitch machine. And I know a lot of people who don't believe in analytics and think that you can just, you know, see ball, hit ball, because, you know, some, you know, coach, you know, little league coach you had in the 1980s told you that's what you're supposed to do. And a lot of people wanted to dismiss that. What is this organization doing to give players the right tools to be able to decipher information, to correct flaws in their game? That's what's ultimately needs to happen here right now. And Luis Robert is obviously going to be kind of the most public instance of this here initially.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I mean, he's going to have at least most of the eyes on him when it comes to this offense. Yoan Moncada is the other name that needs to have that looked at. And I know he takes a lot more pitches than some of the other guys, but the walk rates here, Steve, are not really.
Oh, he's not the guy in my crosshairs right now.
Is it Andrew Vaughn?
No, not even him.
Let me have it.
Eloy Jimenez. Well, yeah, the ground ball factor is back open for business, baby.
Yes, it is. And our guy Sox and Saints been evaluating some data there. And I'm not sure if you're going to write something about these ground balls that Eloy's hitting or if he's going to take a stack at it. But there's definitely a problem there.
Yeah, there's a big problem here, and this has been a problem for much of his career. We see these little short spurts where he's elevating the baseball, and we'll see him slugging for a short period of time. And then for whatever the reason, he'll get away from it. And as you mentioned there, Sox and Sane Beznik was, you know, posting screenshots of the plate appearances from Eloy today and getting these pitches, you know, maybe a little bit underneath
top the letters, right down
the dick and just chopping them right into the ground as always. And then of course, you know, we've got an abductor issue here right away here, three games into the fucking season. All I'm going to say is this about Eloy Jimenez right now. I can't wait because, you know, he had his base running bullshit on Saturday here. I cannot wait for the day that Eloy Jimenez is no longer on the baseball team that I care about, because he is unequivocally one of the dumbest baseball players from a baseball acumen standpoint in this entire league. And I don't know that it can be debated at this point. He seems like a really nice, likable human being, but as a baseball player, I cannot fucking stand him. And I cannot wait until he is gone.
It's so sad that we've reached that point with him. And it's not even just the injuries. There's other parts of the game that are horrendous. This is a guy that should have had tremendous trade value at this juncture of his career. And I think that the White Sox
This is a guy that should be hitting 45 to 50 home runs a year.
Yeah.
He's a big part of the reason why they're in this fucking mess in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, the glove didn't play in the outfield, and if the bat isn't working, what is he doing?
Making a lot of money to not produce.
Yeah, it's sad. Sox did piss this one away, though, Steve, on Saturday. They come out really hot out of the gate, score three runs on Detroit. They're up 3-0. Detroit sort of claws back in this one and ties it up in the seventh, and then eventually – gets the Mickey Mouse runner across in extra innings. I know we all hate this rule, but you sort of smelt this one coming from a mile away. I don't know about you. As soon as the two runs were put up on the board in the seventh inning, it sort of felt like a loss. Again, I wasn't watching this game. I was sort of following it, but I just felt like, hey, something's just not right here. They're going to find a way to lose this if it goes to extras, and that's exactly what they did. Any thoughts on how they pissed this one away?
Well, I mean, the at-bats in the bottom half of the 10th inning from Eloy and Andrew Vaughn were just absolutely atrocious. And again, just going up
this there. This is, again, the middle of your order, right? Yeah. Has to get a runner from second base across home plate to keep this game going.
Yeah, and they're just going up there, just, you know, Eloy swinging it, you know, first pitch, popping the ball, not even having a productive out to advance Luis Robert over to third base at that point. I mean, you've got one of your fastest base runners out there in scoring position already. Hit the fucking ball hard to the right side somewhere, okay? We've all seen Eloy, when right, has pretty prolific opposite field power, and he just goes up there. Just an absolutely atrocious approach to this. Again, it's about not understanding situation. If you get in that spot, if you're going to swing at a pitch early in the count, similar to Luis Robert, you need to be zone hitting. You need to be looking for a pitch middle. If you're going to say middle in, focus on that pitch middle in, and you better let it rip. Not popping this shit up weak to the third baseman here, like we saw, not even advancing a runner. That's a horrendous approach right there in that situation. And again, that is, I think, in some ways, just a microcosm of this team in a lot of ways, that they're just, they don't play the game smart. The players themselves are an understanding of situations and what needs to happen here. And, you know, there's a talent deficit as well. And that's a problem right there when you add all of those elements together.
Yeah, we've got some comments coming in. Cole Buchanan, we need to stop swinging at first pitches. We've spent a lot of time talking about plate approach today with this White Sox team. Friendly reminder, we'll be here all year. Drop your comments in. YouTube, you can comment, I believe, on Facebook as well. And now on X, we can see your comments this year. Drop them in here. We'll get to some. LA here earlier, is it too early to panic? We've talked about the first two games. I don't know if I'm hitting the panic button yet, because I don't know what there is to panic about.
Yeah, with this. I mean, can you really,
like, we're just along for the fucking ride, man.
Can you really panic about it? Can you panic about a team that you expect to lose 100 games coming into the season? I mean, to me, like I said, this is a lot of what I expected to see from this team. You can still be annoyed by it. It is annoying. It offends my baseball sensibilities in a lot of ways. But when you expect this, it does, I think, in some ways, take some of the sting out of it. You know, if you go into a season or any situation in life with expectations and things don't go your way, you can be disappointed. But if you don't expect anything, you can't really get hurt.
Is that what's different about this year?
I think
so. I mean, I think it's different for me too. Last year I was like, I don't want to say annoyed as much as I was unbelievably frustrated with what I was watching. Now this year, no expectations. We can sit back and we can have a little bit more fun, I guess. Criticize things in a different manner, but I have zero expectations for this team. I know I wasn't on the season preview show, Steve, with you and Besnick last week, but I've got zero expectations. I have no idea what we're going to see. It could be 10 times uglier than last year, but at least, like, there's not going to be that heartbreak of, this is a team that's supposed to compete for the division. Sure, I'm more annoyed at the longer term outlook of things than I am with the day-to-day results of what's put up here. I'm going to enjoy watching baseball. I'll probably watch a lot more other teams play baseball, as I'm sure you are too, Steve. But
spent, you know, a lot of time watching my Barbs over the weekend.
Yeah, Saul is in here. I used to be a diehard White Sox fan. Now it's disgusting to watch this organization. That's fair, Saul. I feel for you out there. It is sort of disgusting. It feels like there's no expectations. LA comes back with, if you have no expectations, you can't be let down. I'm sure our guy Johnny Nani would really love that statement, because you're not getting up for the letdown with this approach. And I think that that's what we're sort of insulating ourselves from, is any sort of letdown. And really, we have Chris Getz to thank for that, in my opinion. He went out there and made sure that no one should have any expectations for this team this year. So if we're going to give him any sort of flowers, I think, thank you for not setting me up for a whole summer of expecting good things for my baseball team. I don't know.
But it's not a rebuild.
It's not a rebuild. It's just, we're not going to compete.
Okay.
That's sort of how I look at it. We're not going to compete. We're not going to do anything. US Sports Cards is here. It feels like we are in the first inning of a massive rebuild. At some point in time, it will be the kids can play 3.0. It was fun watching TA rip one into the outfield and watching Berger score. I don't know how we feel about TA and Berger down in Miami. I did watch a lot of Miami Marlins baseball this past
week. I want Jake Berger to hit 40 home runs this year.
I hope he does as well. He should be on this ball club, and I think we would have at least a competent four hitter instead of Eloy Jimenez. And then maybe it would be a lot more difficult to pitch around Luis Robert. That's just a thought.
Yeah. You know, having a guy at first base that has a slugging percentage that starts with a five.
Let's talk about Jake Berger at first base in Miami for a second here, Steve. Go ahead. I think you're right on that track.
At the end of the day, look, a first baseman whose slugging percentage starts with a five, that plays. Andrew Vaughn has never had a slugging percentage higher than 429 in a season. I don't need to see any more from Andrew Vaughn. Jake Eater had a real rough initial outing down in AA Birmingham this weekend here. And unfairly, he is going to be judged a lot and judged very harshly.
Is it because of do you believe it's unfair to judge him on these expectations?
I do, because look, you know, he wasn't like, he didn't ask for this, you know, and at the end of the day, he's going out there, he's trying to do what he can to get his career back on the right track so that he can live his dream and get to the major leagues. He wasn't expecting to be part of a final transaction by a team president that lost his job a couple of weeks later, you know, kind of doing his final fuck you to the organization, taking it away. You know, let's be real about this. One of the few homegrown position players that you could actually point to and say, hey, there's been some positive contribution here, and there has been growth. I think that's the thing that's the most frustrating about the Jake Berger situation, is that there was real tangible growth at the major league level that we were seeing from him. And it continued when he got down to Miami. And I wouldn't be surprised if it continues here this year as well.
You know, I agree with some of the things that you're saying here, Steven. On the other end of that spectrum, you know, did Yoan Moncada ask to be, you know, written about as a phenom and, you know, as a number one talent and be ranked the number one prospect to get here and, you know, do all these things? Professional sports players, they're humans as well. They are, you know, the same people that we are, same makeup, maybe a little bit different, maybe a little more athletic, don't hurt as much unless you play for the White Sox. You seem to have, you know, the same ailments as other, you know, middle-aged men do, but it's to me, really, you might as well judge him, because somebody's got to wear that cross, man. Like, somebody has to wear it, and it's not Kenny Williams. He's gone. You know, he's out of the picture at this point. There has to be a lot of stake in him, because as a White Sox fan who's watching this, you need to recoup some value out of this. And when it feels like a losing proposition, unfortunately, he falls on the sword here. If he doesn't make it, it goes down as one of the worst trades if Jake Berger continues to perform. That sucks. And it sucks for him to be in that position. But he better come up here and throw. I'm sort of in Johnny's camp on this one. Like, he better be a Cy Young, or at least in Cy Young voting, if in order for this trade to make sense.
I think that's...
Unless you really believe that Kenny Williams and Kenny Williams alone was the only one that signed off on this, there's probably some scout within the organization that fed him that information. Unless this organization is as incompetent as a lot of people make it out to be, and that could be very true.
Well, there's a couple of things here. We know that famously there were four organizations that Kenny was allowed to unilaterally make a deal with, the Miami Marlins being one of them. So, you know, whomever on the scouting piece of it said, hey, you know, Jake Eater is a guy to target here and utilize Jake Berger as a means to get him. I mean,
it looks like the most lopsided deal in a while for the
it does. It doesn't look good, but I also push back on this idea that Jake Eater needs to be in Cy Young discussion. You know, I think that's extreme right there. Look, Jake Berger, for the power piece of it that he's going to provide, he's not going to give you a whole lot of value on the defensive side of the ball there. So Jake Eater really needs to be a rotational mainstay.
I'm sorry for the meatball take here, but like, I want something out of this guy.
I understand that. I think a number three starter is a reasonable expectation or what you should be looking for. I think sitting there saying that you should be getting Cy Young votes for Jake Berger, that's too far. Because Jake Berger isn't the type of guy that, like, he's from a value standpoint, he is not going to give a value in line with someone getting Cy Young votes. Like, that's just not realistic.
Well, I mean, young player, controllable.
I understand that, but home again, runs,
can play the corners.
Yeah, but the defense, you're not getting value on the defense, and there is still there was improvement from, you know, a plate discipline standpoint, but still not a particularly high on base threshold for him.
There was still holes there. I get that. I'm maybe number three starter is reasonable. I was going a little meatball take with this, but okay. I agree with you. I just want him to make the major leagues and be an effective piece. I don't know if he's going to move the needle as much in terms of just value that he can give this organization than what Jake Berger would have done for the next 3 to 4 years, if not longer, as a guy that you could potentially, you know, give an extension to and keep around here, fan favorite. That one's going to sting for a while. It's a big miss. I know we haven't talked about Sunday's game yet. We got a couple other comments in here. A lot of people talking about Pedro Grifol. I really tried to get as far away from that name as I possibly can, because we're going to talk about him all year. You know, Steve, let's just quickly get through today's ball game, and then we can touch on a couple other topics before we get out of here at the hour mark. I know you want to talk a little bit about Soroka first and what you saw there. So actually, I'm going to give the floor back to you if you had any comments on Soroka here.
Yeah, Mike Soroka's performance yesterday was very flat from my perspective. You know, he gives up the 4 runs in 5 innings, has 3 walks, no strikeouts. Almost a complete contrast to what we saw from Garrett Crochet and what I talked about, the at-bats looking uncomfortable for the Tigers hitters. They didn't look uncomfortable in the box at all against Mike Soroka. The stuff, like I said, looked very flat. There wasn't anything that really jumped out at me. You know, a lot of 92, 93s on the fastball. The slider, I didn't think that the depth on it was particularly great there. You know, getting behind in counts pretty consistently there. So left a lot to be desired. And again, look, guy, first start for a new organization. He's had a lot of injury problems over the course of the last couple of years. Sometimes that first time out there, the adrenaline gets the better of you here. So I think to write off Mike Soroka after one performance here is too far on this here. But again, just looking at that one individual start there, it left a lot to be desired here. So hopefully him, Ethan Katz, Brian Banister, they go back to the drawing board here, and his next time out against the Kansas City Royals here, he's able to go and put together a better performance.
Hey, this is going to be small sample size theater for a little bit, just the same as we talked about Garrett Crochet at the top of the show. You know, not judging this and not expecting performances to continue. We want to see what they put together before we really write the book on what this season's going to look like for some of these individuals. But well said on Soroka. I know we do have a question in the comments from Saul. We'll get to that after we recap the Sunday game here. This was another interesting pitching performance from Eric Fetty, who, man, this was the White Sox major offseason acquisition, I guess, so to speak. There was some offense provided by, I know he's a fan favorite, Corey Lee, who goes yard in this one, as well as Paul DeJong, another, you know, huge offseason acquisition for Chris Getz and the White Sox. Steve, we wind up falling in this one, another one-run ball game by a final score of 3-2. Sox only walked once in this ball game. Seemed to have the same sort of get the offense going struggles outside of some home runs here. But as we said all last year, man, like, solo home runs are going to kill you. You got to get on base for people to, you know, bring you in. any takeaways from today's ball game? This one, another game. I think all three of these games felt winnable to me, and the Sox came up with none of them.
Yeah, as I talked about earlier in the show, good teams find ways to win close games. Bad teams find ways to lose them. When you have five walks in three games, four of them coming in the game yesterday, you're not going to win a whole lot of baseball games. It's indicative of an organizational problem and players that just simply don't go up there and don't have a strong plate approach and also don't have the ability to be able to work counts consistently and have good quality at bats. That is going to be an issue with this team. There is a talent deficit. I want to be very clear about that. That is going to be a problem throughout the course of the season. So you're going to see a lot of these performances for over the course of the next 159 games, where it's going to be two or three solo home runs in a game, and you lose a game 5-2 or 5-3 because your opposition will go out there and will take walks. Now, the other flip side of this here, and I'll talk about this a little bit with Eric Fetty and the pitching staff over a whole, this series over the course of the weekend, they did a much better job of limiting the walks that they issued. That was a major problem a year ago, and that's something that I touched on over the course of the offseason with Brian Bannister and the success he had in his time with the San Francisco Giants that predated his arrival here in Chicago. So that's obviously going to be paramount for him and for this pitching staff, limiting free passes. They did a good job of that this weekend. Again, the Tigers are not a juggernaut of an offense. There's a juggernaut of an offense on an airplane right now coming to Chicago. If those games even bother to get played over the course of the next 3 days, we'll deal with that in a second. So continuing to go out there and pound the strike zone is going to be important here. Eric Fetty, you know, with his first start with the team here today, there were certainly some positive things that could be gleaned from it here. He did run too many deep counts out there. He did have, I think it was 8 strikeouts over the course of 4 2/3 innings today. A lot of movement on all of his stuff. He's got a very wide array of pitches that he's utilizing, utilizing the sweeper that he developed in his time in the KBO a year ago, working in sinkers, cutters, and splitters. So he's really focusing on movement, and you can actually see a lot of it when he's going out there. But again, just falling behind on too many counts. He threw 96 pitches, I think it was, over the course of the 4 2/3 innings here today. That's just simply too much. Got to go out there and got to get ahead more effectively here to be able to get those 18 outs that I need on a night in and night out basis here. So there were definitely some positives to take from Eric Fetty's performance here today. The stuff I think there is something there, and I am fascinated to see that continue to develop here over the course of the year. But again, a little bit of an incomplete outing from him here today.
I thought the stuff looked okay. Be interesting to see how that develops and translates throughout the season. Steve, all I'm hearing from you out of the first series here is Bannister worked his magic on Garrett Crochet, and you know he wasn't giving enough attention to Fetty and Soroka through spring. And I don't know if that really sets the tone the way that you like to see the tone set. You're trying to correct me again here. You said that there was a lot to be desired through this first series.
You know, there comes a point, as the saying goes, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make the horse drink. Bannister is doing everything he can to lead these horses to water. At some point, the onus falls upon them as individuals to get the job done and to implement the things that he is imparting upon them from a teaching standpoint. So, again, one start for both Mike Soroka and Eric Fetty. So interested to see how this continues to play out here over the course of the next 159 games.
Quick comment in from Blank Name. Fetty has to move away from the sweeper when he feels fatigued. He starts hanging it when he's tired. I think, you know, we sort of saw that with a couple other White Sox pitchers last season, sort of looking at Lance Lynn a little bit. I don't know what your thoughts are on that one, Steve, but that's not just a Fetty problem in my opinion.
No, it's not. And I think, again, that's a byproduct of a guy throwing 90-plus pitches and not even getting through the fifth inning because he was running too many deep counts here today. Yeah.
But it might be a good idea. And some of that's got to be on your catcher as well, you know, going to that pitch and knowing what what is left in the tank of the pitcher. It could be boiled down to a simple communication problem. We'll figure that one out as we go along and look at themes. But I like that comment in there. It's something that I'll keep an eye on as well as this continues to go on. Steve, Sox swept. That's sort of our series recap there. Let's talk a little bit about this. I want to get to the question up there that was left just a little bit ago from Saul before we close it down. Probables. The Braves are coming to town. Steve, what do we have for pitchers? If we do get the series in, I'll give a weather report in a minute.
Yeah, the forecast is not looking good for the next 3 days, folks. So if you are planning to get out to the ballpark to see the offensive juggernaut that is the Atlanta Barbs, well, get your ponchos ready. Tomorrow it is scheduled to be Charlie Morton versus Chris Flexen, one of the other veteran additions over the course of the winter, making his White Sox debut. Tuesday night, and this is going to be an interesting one, and it will be cold as hell at the ballpark if they find a way to get this game in. Garrett Crochet making his second start of the year against this vaunted Braves offense, so seeing if he's able to continue on the success that he had this past Thursday against former White Sox Reynaldo Lopez, who signed a free agent deal with the Barbs over the course of the winter, returning to the corner of 35th and Shields to make a start against the Sox for the first time.
Interesting that he was able to crack that rotation.
It is an interesting choice. I personally don't think it's one that's going to stick for the entirety of the season here, but we'll see if that ends up playing out. Wednesday afternoon is going to be an interesting one here. Sox have TBD listed. There's a lot of rumblings out there that this could be Nick Nastrini coming up to make his big league debut. And boy, nothing like throwing it right into the fire there against this team from Atlanta. Against fireballer Spencer Strider, the best that the Braves got, the guy that led Major League Baseball in strikeouts a year ago for a team in the White Sox that doesn't necessarily put the bat on the ball a lot and does have some swing and miss. That could be a recipe for disaster right there. But again, looking like a lot of rain. I know here as I'm sitting in Northwest Indiana at 9 o'clock on Sunday night, it was raining pretty hard out here earlier about an hour and a half ago. And it doesn't look like it is letting up until about Thursday here when this team is supposed to be in Kansas City. So we'll see if they even get these ones in.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very precarious situation in terms of scheduling here. I don't believe the Braves are supposed to come back to Chicago at all this season, Steve.
Well, they will have to come here eventually to play the Cubs.
They will. So I'm just looking through the scheduling here. I don't know where you're fitting in three ball games. This could wind up being a doubleheader situation somewhere along the way. I just don't know how you fit this in. Should all three of these rain out, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of scheduling issues created by the storm systems that are moving across the United States as we speak. Also raining here right now, and the forecast doesn't look like it's going to let up until sometime on Thursday when the Sox are going to head out of town to Kansas City, and there's going to be some, you know, big giant reunion down there with all the Kansas City Royals and White Sox, who are one big happy family now. But I don't think they're getting any of these games in. That's just my prediction. I don't know if you have a series prediction if they do play.
Prediction.
You got a prediction?
Pain.
There it is. I would say 0-3. I think the Sox, if they do manage a way to get these baseball games in, we're going to be looking at an 0-6 White Sox team the next time we talk on these airwaves. It's going to be ugly, and I expect people to start to get even more upset at what they're seeing on their television screens or in the ballpark. I don't see how the White Sox are beating the Braves at all. I don't see it.
I think the more interesting thing, as again, assuming they are able to get these games played, is – will they be able to keep the Barbs in single digits?
As Blank Name says, it will either be pain or rain. I love that. I love that. Thanks for the comment there, Blank Name. Keep them coming. Keep them in single digits. That's a good, you know, litmus test here for this White Sox team. Can you keep the Braves offense to single digits in any of these ball games? And, you know, looking at the offense specifically, on Wednesday's matchup. Spencer Strider would carve this White Sox offense apart. This is going to be a tough April.
It is. You know, we saw a tough April a year ago that ultimately derailed this team season before it could even really get started. And we may very well be on the precipice of seeing the same thing here again.
Again, expectations, throw them out the window. If you're expecting this team to compete, I would say throw the expectations out the window and be happily surprised if something changes here. But, you know, one other note, there was no Brian Shaw appearances that I witnessed. I don't know about you.
Yeah, that's fascinating right there.
You brought up Nastrini. Shaw was sort of a late addition to the White Sox roster. I thought that if he was going to be the odd man out, that, you know, Pedro Grifol, considering how he just rode Brian Shaw's arm, invincible arm, he's one of the top athletes in Chicago. That's not up for debate. You know, just through the stretch last season, that you would have seen like three Shaw appearances this week, and then they would sort of discard him. They didn't use him at all, which tells me that maybe there's some evaluation going on and that Shaw's still in the mix.
Counterpoint. I think they may have been thinking about it from the perspective of knowing what kind of offense the Barbs have, having low expectations for that series and realizing, hey, we're going to need somebody to cover outs those 3 days. So let's save those bullets for those games when they're going to be needed more.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. I'm talking if they're going to DFA Shaw for Nastrini to bring him up. I'm looking more through this bullpen. I don't know all the contract statuses here. I don't know who has options down. That would take a little bit of research here at the moment, but I don't really know which piece you move out for Nick Nastrini if that takes place. The rain may save somebody here, Steve. I don't know, because you might be able to make it through this rotation without your fifth starter. Just based on the rain and the off days.
You know, what would really help is if maybe on that Wednesday, if they changed it to a doubleheader, so you get the extra guy for that roster spot, so you don't have to burn an option from the stream. You can have him come up, pitch the game, and then that also saves you a little bit of service time clock.
That does. You know, sometimes the rain helps. We'll see. Maybe they get one or two of these things in. Although Wednesday's forecast looks like the shittiest of them all, considering there's supposed to be that, you know, white stuff falling from the sky potentially here. So who knows? It could get a little interesting. There might be some Jerry Reinsdorf specials with people showing up to ballparks, games getting canceled, extra long delays. Stay tuned to Sox on Tap. We'll keep you guys informed as much as we can on what's going on. Steve, it's been awesome getting back on the microphone here. Let's take this one last question before we close it down. This came in earlier during our discussion. Would you have rather have run last year's team back with a different manager or start the Chris Getz era? I'll let you answer first, and then I'll give mine, and we'll get out of here.
I don't think a different manager would have really made much of a difference here. Pedro Grifol, while he is a dope, at the end of the day, there's just not enough talent on this team. There wouldn't have been enough talent with the group that this team had a year ago, even with a different manager. Would they have been as bad last year with someone else at the helm? Probably not. But at the end of the day, you know, there's just not enough talent on this team. And that's an organizational problem. Everybody knows that I would have preferred to have just ripped this thing up completely, have no Chris Getz, completely change the organizational makeup of this team and, you know, have somebody like a Willie Harris or...
I like that name.
Yeah, I mean, that's somebody that, you know, we talked about a lot during Rebuild, one of the episodes that aired last week. He's a guy that would have certainly, you know, been an interesting one to watch, or just, you know, a Joe Espada, you know, if you could have found a way to tempt him to leave the situation in Houston there, or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different external names that you could go to and just try to change the approach and change the culture, so to speak, of this team. But I don't think at the end of the day that if you would have had just a different manager in there, that it would have changed the outlook of the 2023 White Sox or the 2024 White Sox that much. Much the same way that I thought that, you know, the way people were expecting things to all of a sudden be inherently better because Tony La Russa was gone. I came out and I said that just changing the manager with last year's team wasn't going to fix things because there were foundational problems there. And, you know, there were people out there saying that, well, if, you know, you get rid of Tony La Russa, that's automatically just going to make things better. And I said, hey, you know, maybe hit the brakes on that a little bit. That's not really the case. There are.
Is that sort of the same argument that moving Andrew Vaughn from right field to first base was automatically going to make him better?
Yeah, boy, amazing how that didn't all of a sudden turn him into a prolific power hitter the way it was supposed to.
Hey, it is what it is. Here we are. My answer to this is very similar to yours. I don't want to relive last season at all. I don't even care if there's a different manager there. That's in the past. I saw that fucking "it's over" meme way too many times. I've already seen it too many times this year. It makes my head fucking hurt, if I'm being honest. I never want to see it again.
The beatings will continue until morale improves, though, Anthony.
Yeah, I know. Like, let's find some new material here. Trying to think. There's not much. It doesn't even matter. I'm already losing my mind on this team already. Start the Kritz guest era. I don't want that either. There's no real positives here. We titled the episode "It's Different," but it's not really different. It's the same White Sox team. It's the same White Sox organization that finds ways to lose ball games. As you've said probably 5 or 6 times on the show today, good teams find ways to win ball games. This is not a good baseball team. Those were 3 very winnable baseball games today. And if you're going to try and tell me that this is any different than what we've witnessed, it's just a different version of losing. I don't think either of us like that. That's why I don't have expectations. So, you know, let's have a summer. Let's figure out ways to get through this together. My answer here is I'm just excited to talk baseball with you and Johnny and everybody else on Sox on Tap this season and figure out ways that we can have fun without, you know, worrying about winning or losing. Because it's really hard to care right now, Steve. I don't know about you, but it's really fucking hard to care as much about this team when you don't have expectations. I would much rather go back to 2019 and feel that there was a direction and something that you can look forward upon. Because as we sit here today in 2024, I don't know what direction we're going. I don't know if we're going up. I don't know if we're going down. Things don't inherently make sense to me as to what we're doing besides trading out pieces that cost less than what guys did before on previous rosters. There's one shiny prospect in the organization in Colson Montgomery that gets talked about, but it just lacks excitement. So I'd rather get in a time machine, go back to 2019 and, you know, figure out a way to, you know, make it better. If we're being honest here, I'm beat down from this, and this is only the first show of the year, Steve. So, I'll leave it at that. Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Baseball is back. Try to find some kind of silver lining in this thing.
And we just hate silver linings. Hearing Steve say that should tell you something.
We do. Look, we're not a silver linings show, but this is what the 2024 White Sox are going to be. As I talked about with Beznik on Wednesday here, it's you hope coming into this thing you have positive developments from some guys, whether it's, you know, an Eric Fetty, a Mike Soroka, a Nick Nastrini, or Colson Montgomery when he comes up. That's really what you have to be watching for. If you know what you're watching and what to watch for with this team, it does make things a lot less aggravating in a sense. Again, the idea of knowing that this team is going to lose 100 plus games pisses me off completely. And they're not even going to get any benefit out of it. It's not like in 2017 or 2018 when you could sit there and say, hey, lose as many games as you can so that you get that additional draft capital and you have that enhanced draft position. They can't pick higher than 10.
Johnny's favorite guy, Rob Manfred, for that.
There is no benefit in any way to them losing baseball games this year. So if you can get positive development out of a couple of these guys, that's what you got to be paying attention to here, really. And that sucks.
Here we go. Thank you to everybody who tuned in to the opening series recap show here at Sox on Tap. We appreciate it. Just the normal outro here, Steven. You can follow him over at NWI_Steve. You can follow my.
By the way, Anthony, I got one other thing I want to. I just got one other thing here, non baseball related. For anybody, that's listening to the show, watching on the live stream here, that's an avid college basketball fan, know that there is but one.
We almost made it.
Big 10 program that is going to be represented at the Final Four next weekend in Phoenix, Arizona. And that is the B1G's best back-to-back B1G champs, the Purdue Boilermakers Final Four bound, unlike the rest of you mid-card jabronis.
I gave you final thoughts and you needed another one. There we go. I'll give you the floor on that. I know Johnny would do the same if his U of I team made it all the way. But as I was saying, be sure to follow the show at Sox on Tap. Follow On Tap Sportsnet at On Tap Sportsnet. Follow the YouTube. That's youtube.com/OnTapSportsNet. We'll be back this week. Even if they rain out, I think we're going to still do a show at some point just to get on these airwaves and talk more White Sox baseball. We've got another final episode. It's Steve and I's recap of the Rebuilt series. You can find all of those on our YouTube. As I just mentioned, that's youtube.com/OnTapSportsNet. Look for the Rebuilt series. We broke down everything that went wrong with Rebuild 2.0. I hope we don't have to do another follow-up to that, a Rebuild 2.0. to talk about everything that's happening in this 5-year span. But if we do, I think Steve and I are up to the task. Maybe we'll make a few changes next time around in another series of Rebuilt episodes. But that was super fun. It took us pretty much all winter to get that.
No, it wasn't fun, actually.
It was super fun. We had like the most horrifying conversations that we could possibly have and dug up all sorts of bad memories over the course of 2016 through 2023, and we broke it all down for you. So hours of content there available to use over on the youtube.com/OnTapSportsNet, all for free. You can watch us talk all about everything that went wrong in the Rick Hahn rebuild. Like I said, one more episode coming. Steve and I's reaction, no guests on this one, just about what we learned and experienced through all of those conversations. Excited to debut that one. Probably coming this week, especially if we get some rainouts. We'll try and get you guys some content. Steve, it was a pleasure being back on the microphone with you, recapping White Sox baseball. We're back for whatever it's worth, but close it down how we always do. White Sox forever.
White Sox for life.